Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Simon Briggs is here. Hello, Simon Briggs.
Hello, how are you?
What a joy to have him back. And we don't know which version we're going to get, whether it's the US Open version, which nobody will forget, or the version we had a few weeks ago when you sounded a bit tired until you warmed it up.
You were talking to me on WhatsApp audio, and what I was getting was every question was starting really slow, really fast, and then went slow towards the end from your end.
Right.
Which is quite weird. So I never quite knew if I was going to find out what you were asking me.
I see. We've got the US Open version.
Strange
technical effect on the internet.
Details about your inside-out underpants in real time, Simon.
That's right.
Yeah.
We did. This is a tennis podcast, folks. It's not a joke. We do have real tennis to talk about involving Stefanos Tsitsipas and Alexander Zverev, which has just happened, and Rafael Nadal and Daniil Medvedev, which happened about 12 hours ago. And it's been an eventful day, Catherine, hasn't it? Because I did not really expect the stuff that has just happened to happen. If anybody hasn't seen it. All right, okay. So Daniil Medvedev and Rafael Nadal came out, shared the first two sets. Daniil Medvedev goes up 5-1, has match point, and loses against Rafael Nadal. We then had Stefanos Tsitsipas, 3-3 with Alexander Zverev. Everything's cooking up nicely. Catherine and Matt have sat and watched the match together. They've had their chips. Even a burger got into the conversation, which is almost guaranteed to mean an epic. And about 40 minutes later, it was all over. And Tsitsipas has just wiped the floor with him. Bit of a surprise.
I said be more specific, and you've just described everything that happened today.
Yeah, well, you asked.
What would you like us to comment on?
I don't know.
Where should we start?
What is going on with Alexander Zverev, Simon?
Well, he was checking his phone, according to some people on Twitter.
Which isn't allowed.
No, and the question is whether it just suggests that he's on Tinder, or if he's just trying to show that he's not that interested in the match. Because there were other symptoms of a man whose mind wasn't entirely on the job, including towards the end. He just played at a ridiculous speed through his last service game, didn't he? I mean, he really was trying to transmit not bothered vibes from the Little Britain canon. He just kept on sort of pottering up to the service line, not really bouncing the ball, just hitting the serve, and then didn't even move his feet sometimes when the return came in.
And he serve-volleyed on Tsitsipas's set point in the first set. It was like a throwaway serve-volley. It was just
completely bizarre.
And this all happened after we've watched Rafael Nadal, the man who had told him not one negative face only 6 short weeks ago, showing not one negative face on the court whilst coming back against Medvedev. Zverev is not getting this, is he? It's not sinking in that you can't just dial it in against these people and win.
I think he came out, didn't he, for the first few games, and then he kind of became demoralised, and after the first match, I thought maybe he's going to be inspired by being back at the venue where he had his biggest success. But I did write that it was really hard to tell after the first round on Monday, because you just didn't know how bad. You could see Rafa was pretty bad. and he wasn't applying any pressure. So it's really hard to judge where Zverev was that night. And I thought, you know, maybe he's getting it. He's serving big for sure. Maybe he's coming back. And then tonight was like, no, he really isn't.
We're probably damning Tsitsipas with faint praise there by criticising Zverev, because I thought Tsitsipas was sensational tonight.
Yeah, and I don't think it is damning him with faint praise, because he was brilliant in all the ways that Zverev isn't. His brilliance showed up all the things that Zverev isn't. Canny, smart, a good anticipator, someone brimming with variety and instinct and weapons, but also solidity, everything, and the mentality.
Tsitsipas doesn't shut you down, does he? Even playing well, he kind of gives you a chance to do your thing. He doesn't suffocate you.
I think it depends what your thing is. I mean, Zverev's thing is to belt the serve and crack the backhand, and I think Tsitsipas made he blunted his weapons.
He was reading the serve.
Yeah.
And he was blocking it back. Which is a criticism that some of the champions of the sport have had of him, that he doesn't know how to hit a block return on that backhand side. Well, he has learned how.
And
it seems to me.
And we talk about Zverev being, well, looking dejected and demoralised. I think a large part of that is because of what Tsitsipas was doing to him, exposing him. And if there's one guy Zverev doesn't want to be exposed against, it's Tsitsipas, because of their little feuds that they've had, war of words. You know, he doesn't want to be exposed by a player 3 years his junior who looks like he's got a more expansive, more progressive game than Zverev.
He's created this sort of fig leaf of respectability on his second serve, in that I don't know what the exact numbers were, but there weren't many double faults today. But that's because his second serve is now a dolly, pretty much. It was frequently in the 70s, and absolutely, I mean, Tsitsipas knew where it was going every time, and where it was going a lot of the time was halfway up the box and sitting short. So in order to make that second serve reliable again, he's made it crap.
But he was serving quite big on second against Rafa. Again, he was up against a guy who was really not present on any level, and he berated himself afterwards for not even showing competitive spirit. So actually, Rafa had the same problem on Monday night that Zverev had tonight. It's just that in Rafa it was a one-off aberration, and then he complained about his own application in the interview room. I don't suppose we'll be hearing that from Zverev in 5 minutes or so when he comes in. Actually, he's coming in now.
I saw something from Tsitsipas that I don't remember seeing before. On an indoor court, he's developed a Federer-like running forehand towards the net, sort of hitting it diagonally, moving forwards, and sort of carving off the angle and half-volleying with a full follow-through just to take time away.
And his numbers at the net this tournament are sensational. 22 out of 26 net points won in the first round, 16 out of 17... in this match today. And as you say, David, I don't think that's necessarily because he's volleying brilliantly. I think it's because he's putting himself in such good positions at the net with either his approach or just knowing when to come forward. He's got such a good sense of the court.
It was almost like he's the one who's been hanging out with Roger Federer every 5 minutes.
I increasingly think that, I mean, obviously there are many, but if you had to isolate and narrow down one single decisive factor in greatness, or one single decisive factor in the difference between a Tsitsipas and a Zverev or a Shapovalov, it's decision making. It's decision making, shot selection, those instincts. That for me is what Dimitrov is. That's the chip that Dimitrov is missing. It's the chip that I worry that Shapovalov is missing, although I hope I'm wrong, and Tsitsipas has just got it.
The other thing, though, Tsitsipas, you would not see a reaction at the end like that Zverev gave. You would not see Tsitsipas throwing in the towel in like that in the last couple of games. He's got the same love for the sport that Federer's got, I think. He's got that passion. He's obsessed with the sport.
What doesn't he have passion about?
He's obsessed with Assassin's Creed. as he wrote on the camera.
He just can't get anything quite right.
Right, no.
Like Leicester? No. Give me another try. Leicester? Leicester?
This was him trying to pronounce Leicester, was it?
Leicester Square, yeah.
And this was him trying to spell Assassin's Creed, and he just put a random N in the middle of it.
Bless him. Oh, he gets everything right when he's hitting tennis shots and everything else wrong. Yeah. But we love him anyway.
I don't think he's passionate about going for a barbecue with his fellow players, is he? He really could just take the whole social element of the tour and just leave it on one side.
It's just fantastic. I love that.
Yeah, someone, a young guy, a young person that's not bothered about fitting in. It's great.
I was commentating tonight with Dominic Inglot, British doubles player, on Five Live Sports Extra. He said he'd played doubles with both Zverev and Tsitsipas. And he made the point that they spent the whole time targeting Zverev at the net because he can't volley. He just doesn't... They expected that if they blasted it repeatedly at him, he would not be able to handle it. And he said when they initially played Tsitsipas, the same was true, but even throughout the match, Tsitsipas's level improved at the net, and by the end of it, there was targeting him was not sensible.
He's played a lot of doubles this year, Tsitsipas, hasn't he? He reached the final of Miami with Wesley Kulhoff, and then Kulhoff ditched him. Kulhoff needed Tsitsipas to... They played Indian Wells and Miami together, and Tsitsipas said, I've committed to play all the Masters 1000 with Wesley for the year. And turns out Wesley was using Tsitsipas for his singles ranking. And once he reached that final in Miami, his doubles ranking was high enough that he was able to ditch old Tsitsi and team up with Robin Haaser, I think.
And Tsitsipas then had the traumatic experience of playing with Kyrgios. Multiple occasions.
Stefanik. There's a memory.
But it feels like the whole thing's being planned quite strategically as a campaign, isn't it? Probably by Apostolos, one suspects. You know, he's saying, I want you to get out there and improve your net game, and probably thinking of a Federer-ish kind of game plan that he wants to see Tsitsipas, his son, adopting. And in some ways, you wonder how much is it, you know, did Apostolos take on Papa tonight and come out on top?
Yeah. Well, that's qualified Tsitsipas, who's now into the semi-finals at the first attempt. Zverev's going to have to wait and see, isn't he? He's now, who's he playing now? Medvedev.
So he plays Medvedev. It's complicated. I've roughly got the breakdown. If Zverev wins, he's through. So if Zverev beats Medvedev, he is through.
Okay.
But if Nadal wins against Tsitsipas and Zverev loses, then Nadal's through.
It was a bad result for Nadal tonight, because if Zverev had won, Nadal would be holding his destiny in his own hands, and now he's relying on Medvedev to beat Zverev.
Will he do that? Will Medvedev beat Zverev?
Probably. You think that it depends how he reacts to today.
What was going on with Medvedev today? How did he lose from 1-5 down? Apart from the fact that, yes, Nadal is an incredible warrior. Even Nadal admitted, whilst saying, look, what I have to do, and I have to do it every time I play, is be present for every point. We know that. But he said it's 1 in 1,000 that you come back from a position like that.
Well, he was asked in the Spanish press, the first question was, as journalists, we've run out of words for you, Rafa. Can you help us? And how would you describe this match in one word? And he just said, suerte, luck. That was the first word that came to him. It wasn't necessarily anything that he did, other than the fact that, as you said, he stayed present. He didn't show Medvedev anything that he was done. He wasn't sulking, or he was staying in present. And once he got one break back, that was the moment he started to believe and thought, I can chase him down now.
Is suerte then the word for the disturbing beast that lives inside Daniil Medvedev that he described in his press conference?
Yeah, that was a bleak answer, wasn't it?
Do tell. What was that?
Well, he was asked about his on-court behaviour, which was sub Andy Murray.
giving sarcastic thumbs up, wasn't he, to his support team repeatedly.
And then racket claps when things got really bad.
It's like he's haunted by some demons on the court that live inside him, and he hasn't quite figured out a way to not express them, and this is the best he can do at the moment, is channel them through slightly irritating sarcastic thumbs up. But he says it's a massive improvement, because when he was younger he actually said the words if I missed the ball, I immediately threw my racket over the fence, which is it's an amazing image, isn't it?
Well, it was at the end of 2017 when he employed Gilles Savary's current coach, French chap, moved to the south of France. And at that point, he had a horrible rap sheet, which we've detailed on the podcast before. And that decision was precipitated by him realising that he was at a fork in the road. I can keep on throwing my racket over the fence and throwing coins at the feet of umpires, or I can sort this out and attempt to realise my potential. And choosing Savara as the coach was a very definite decision in the sort this out direction, because his whole mantra was, I'm not going to stand for this stuff. Attitude is everything. Our main thing to work on is going to be your attitude, and boy has that worked. I'm not sure how long he'd take that for. I know we talk a lot about, you know, the key to a coach being able to be a good coach is them not being afraid of being fired, and obviously I don't know enough about him to know if he's that guy, but from what I hear about their relationship and how it came about and what it's founded on, I can't imagine him being the sort of guy that puts up with this stuff for too long.
You've interviewed Medvedev, haven't you, Simon?
He's a charming interviewee. I mean, he's brilliant off the court, and he seems so frictionless in his movement through the back end of the season. He always looked happy. There was no kind of trace of that sort of touring kind of exhaustion that comes over a lot of players. And I thought this guy is just made for this lifestyle. But then that was quite an extreme bout of box baiting, wasn't it, tonight?
Yeah.
Or this afternoon, I should say. And he does go through extremes. You wonder if he'll, having got to the final of six successive tournaments, will he self-destruct in six successive tournaments now? He's streaky, isn't he, like that?
Was that a choke today?
Yep.
From him?
Yep.
1-5 down? 1-5 up, rather?
Yeah.
I mean, I watched it back. Watched the first time and then watched it back to see what happened, and he missed just gallons of straightforward ground strokes, and Rafa would win a point with a good shot, and then he'd miss one with an inexplicable error, and that was a pattern. And Rafa won 20 of the next 24 points, I think, after the match point that he saved with a little drop shot.
Ouch.
It's definitely not the metronomic winning of titles, is it?
No, it's not.
I wouldn't put it past him to beat Zverev. Really wouldn't. I mean, he crushed him in Shanghai, was it?
Yeah.
And Rafa was better today, considerably better than he was against Zverev, but still by no means
he's a way off, isn't he,
his best. And he was talking in the Spanish section of his press conference about the difference today was that he didn't think that he was going to make errors, which he said very openly. When I was playing Zverev, as soon as I hit the ball, I thought it was going to go out. And for Nadal, who's sort of, his whole game is kind of built on that safety that he builds into his game with the spin, that must be really disturbing to have that feeling. And the other thing he says is that he is lacking a bit of conviction in his forehand due to the hand injury that he picked up after the US Open, which forced him out of Shanghai and the last day of the Labour Cup. And he says he's since then he's not been hitting his forehand exactly how he wants, because he's a bit worried about it, about kind of going for it and getting that pure strike on the ball. So as much as he did well to win that match today, he's not looking, you know, brilliant overall in terms of this tournament and going on to win it. But
I'm not sure he'd be here if it wasn't that the year end number one was at stake.
Agreed.
And he only needs to beat Tsitsipas.
Only.
That was a bad result for Novak today, as indeed was last night. but he must have been frustrated to see Medvedev blow the match point.
I mean, it'd be interesting to see whether he plays Davis Cup.
Well, it's a pretty big deal.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. Stu Fraser said to him after the Zverev match, it's quite interesting, this press conference that he gave, where he also had a
he bit back at Ubaldo for asking whether he'd been put off by getting married.
Yes, we briefly covered that last night, and that came up again today. More of that in a minute.
But an interesting press conference, particularly because Stu said to him, you might have to play 7 matches, and actually it could be 9. I think Stu later realised it could be 9 matches in 2 weeks. And I thought Rafa welled up a bit there. He was silent for quite a long time, and then it felt like to me like his throat closed on him at the end of the answer, and he kind of wiped his eye. And I made it up, but I thought he was actually quite upset at the fact that he doesn't feel like he's in optimal shape, and that he might. He said, "I'll see. I mean, I'll do what I can." Basically, He certainly wasn't making any guarantees, and he looked upset to me. I mean, I think I might maybe on my own a little bit on that, but it was just I was watching him quite carefully, and it seemed like maybe there was more feeling there than people might have realised at the time.
There was a bit of feeling in the press conference today, Matt. You were blocked in.
I know, because, I couldn't get out.
Because of a set-to between Ubaldo Scanagata and Rafael Nadal. Tell us more.
Well, I'm not entirely sure how it started. You know, these press conferences end and everyone kind of shuffles out of the room, and suddenly my path was blocked because Ubaldo and Nadal were...
Well, I think Ubaldo went over to say, I'm sorry if the question annoyed you, but, you know, I was just, I don't know... trying to raise an issue.
And Nadal's agent was quite clear to Nadal that he shouldn't get involved with this, but Nadal said, no, I want this. I want to have this out. And then they said a lot of words very quickly in Spanish, which I must admit I didn't quite understand. But Nadal ended that conversation pissed off.
He was cross that Ubaldo had sent a tweet that made it look like it was Ubaldo who'd been slighted, and that it implied that Rafa should be apologising to him.
Drama. Goodness.
Press conference aggro.
This scoreline prompted Matt to send the cruelest of tweets out, which was, what is the worst choke in tennis history? He wasn't put up to it by me
Paul
at
Henri
all.
Mathieu.
For a second. Paul Henri Mathieu in...
Davis Cup final 2002 against Eugenie.
The one that ruined him before he'd even arrived.
Even a thing, yeah.
Cool. That was tough. The outcome was certainly pretty tough.
Lou Talou says here, we've had 50 plus answers on this in a couple of hours. Corrier against Gaudio, the French Open, a whole season's unstoppable momentum, his moment to be unequivocally crowned clay king, the young Nadal about to steal his limelight, the trophy within sight, then somehow it just froze and evaporated.
Well, this is bleak.
Yeah, Chris Savory comes up with Sabatini from 6-1, 5-1 up against Mary Jo Fernandez in the 1993 French Open quarterfinal. Ouch.
What about Jeremy Bates at Didsbury? Do we know this one? You heard this story?
I know.
Funnily,
it.
No, yeah. I don't.
Go on, Simon.
I think he was 2 sets up and 5-1 or something.
Against Razban Sabau or something. What's his name?
Is he Latvian?
Romanian.
Romanian, sorry.
Yeah.
And it's become a kind of thing that if you start to talk about who a British player might play in the next round, people call it a breach of Didsbury rules.
Because inevitably, you'll be still there 4 hours later and your dinner reservation will be gone. So anyway, loads of chokes, I'm afraid. It's a bit mean.
I think if Daniela Hantikova were here, she would probably submit herself for this. She was 6-love, 2-love against Ivanovic in an Australian Open semi-final.
I mean, if you ask a floating sports fan, there's only one answer, right? I'm not talking about tennis nuts. There's one show that every... No, I mean
in tennis.
Oh.
Jana Novotna.
No, Jana Novotna. No. That's the one that everyone knows. I mean, I think you're being tennis podcastees here and saying, OK, we don't need to talk about that one, but we just should allude to it, right?
Yeah, I quite like that, tennis podcastees.
Yes. I do have a few that say, dear Jana Novotna, God bless her. Obviously no longer with us anymore, but thankfully she had her moment to win the title herself. But yeah, how about this one? Mikhail Penforsch against Jimmy Connors. I remember this match. 1987 Wimbledon, 6-1, 6-1, 4-1. And Penforsch lost.
This is horrible.
It was my idea. It wasn't Matt's idea. Anyway, so we've talked about chokes now, and that's that. And Catherine's given me daggers. Simon's looking at his watch. I think he's got to go and file
possibly,
newspaper stuff.
Can we talk about Herbert Mahou?
Yeah, go on.
Oh, yeah, daily Herbert Mahou update.
They were great. they're qualified for the semi-finals. Matt dug out a quote from L'Equipe pre-match, which just, I mean, embellishes further the story that we've already documented in detail. But Herbert saying that Mahou couldn't even look him in the eye during the US Open.
That's nice.
I mean, that was three months ago.
Yeah.
Besties
less than 3 months
now,
ago.
They're all right now. Okay.
Oh, they are so all right now.
There was a good moment.
They're winning this thing, I think.
Yeah,
on the eve of this tournament, there was a press doubles players pro-am. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, we saw your green shirt.
Yeah, we saw your shirt.
We sure did hear about this, Simon.
The point I was going to make was that, you know, everyone played this kind of... there was about 30 people on one court, so you played one shot and had to rotate out.
One stood out more than any other.
It was a little tricky to get any rhythm. But the point was that once 27 of those 30 people had cleared off, you know, looking for pizza or a shower or a train home, Mahout stayed on the court with the two best players, who are both Swiss reporters, and they gave him a training session. So that these guys were standing, you know, as a coach would, halfway between the baseline and the service line, and serving at him from there. And he was taking it really seriously and tuning up his returns.
Wow.
So, you know, he was on point before the tournament even started.
We look forward to our invitations next time. So what are you writing about tomorrow, Simon?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Rafa's redemption, I think it might be on the front page of the sports section.
Wow.
Wow. Not Team Berrettini.
Which is tomorrow's
look at that one.
I think, match.
Yeah. I think I got a line in about Medvedev's match unspooling like an elevator cable in a disaster movie.
You had a go at me for the choking conversation. Oh, fantastic. Rightio then, Simon. So what's going to happen tomorrow night before you go? Novak Djokovic, we won't bother with the Berrettini against Team, which is the exhibition of all exhibition matches in the afternoon. What about the evening session? Novak Djokovic against Roger Federer.
I think Djokovic played a very, very good match last night, and therefore I back him. Nobody else... As Mark Petchy made the point on Twitter, nobody else would have created that level of performance from Team. You wouldn't be able to do that if Novak hadn't been there getting 90% of the balls back. It wouldn't have been quite as incredible, would it? Mm. So on that basis, I'm going with Djokovic.
Okay. Yeah.
Djokovic.
Full house.
Yeah.
He hasn't. Federer hasn't beaten him since here in 2015.
I'm going Federer.
Oh.
Yes.
That was a sudden reverse.
Go on, Federer. Not that I'm supporting him. I just want to be right. That's all that's about.
Do you really think that, though?
The only thing is it the tournament of the single-handers? You know, we've since the past, we've had team, maybe Federer tomorrow, if he did turn it around or turn around the expectation of us. Could it be because of the court is a low bouncer?
Yeah, I think Federer is going to turn it on. 2 out of 3 sets. He's going to bring it. He's going to...
I think he'll bring
possibility.
It.
He's going to do some Tsitsipas stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Time is on to something.
I feel as a two-hander, I can say this. They are just better. They are objectively better single-handers.
No, they're objectively prettier, but usually weaker.
Dominic team
all
disagrees.
Things factored in, better.
I think Dominic team being able to play backhands like that, because he beat Novak in the backhand to backhand. I felt like, from what I saw today, which wasn't the whole match, felt like Tsitsipas beat Zverev in the backhand to backhand. And that doesn't happen in most events with a single-hander against a two-hander, and I wonder if it's the low bounce.
Mm. We have a couple of retirements from the sport. Thomas Berdych looks as though he's about to retire, and Dominika Sibulkova has definitely retired. How will you remember those players? Sibulkova first.
I remember Sibulkova for coming back into the press conference when we asked her about Serena Williams taking her place in the seedings at Wimbledon last year. Gave us a tactful answer, left the room, came back in 20 minutes later, said, "No, I'm sorry, I'm not going to let this go," and then ripped into the organisers. And normally if a player comes back, it's to clarify in the opposite direction and try and downplay something they wish they hadn't said, but she decided to ramp it up.
Or to come back in and chastise somebody who's written something they don't like.
It doesn't usually go that fast, though. I mean, that would be ridiculously quick to get that up.
And she has an incredible... This is going to sound weird when I say it, but it's true. A bit to identify tennis balls by their smell.
Mm.
She can tell the difference between a Slazenger ball, a head ball, any other tennis balls, just by sniffing them.
That sits about levels of weird, isn't it?
Yes. Which was...
Don't
I'm
tell
not really
him
sure,
that.
I'm not really sure how she realised that, and also how sort of content producers realised that was a thing. I just don't understand how that video came about, but it is a great video.
We need to go back in time and find out the origins of that particular story. Yeah,
but she sniffs balls before she serves, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Mm.
So presumably they developed it from there, but they were surprised that she was incredibly... She got it within half a second every time.
Yeah, it's like a superpower.
So, somebody on Twitter said she was like a Rafael Nadal in terms of her attitude and approach, and I agree with that. You know, you every single point, no matter the disappointment, she would dust herself down. She would be pogoing up and down. She'd be ready to go. I mean, this woman was... She's 5'3.5". You know, she's so outmatched physically by so many players, and yet she would stand toe to toe with anybody. Even if they got the better of her, she would not back down.
And she took out Joe Conta, didn't she, after the Serena seeding imbroglio? She was so fired up, and it just felt like she completely steamrolled Joe. And it was like Joe had been the one who actually carried the can for that decision.
And I think she kind of transformed her game, because when she started, she was a counterpuncher essentially. She would kind of use other people's power, but she realised that actually she could pack a punch herself, and then became much more aggressive. And then obviously, you know, her standout achievement would be winning the WTA finals.
And yeah,
for her to achieve that, you know, tournament of that calibre was remarkable with what she had. She was a maximiser. I think the Nadal comparison's right, and kind of David Ferrer as well.
Yeah, David Ferrer's a good one. Australian Open runner-up too.
Big fan of a lift selfie.
Yes, I've noticed that.
I was asked to move out of the way so that a woman in a bustier could take a lift selfie the other night.
Was that her?
My hotel?
No, it wasn't her.
No.
Okay.
Excuse me, you're contaminating my excellent lift selfie. Could you move out of the way, please?
Did you have good Insta game?
I mean, I think that probably is what counts as good Insta game, yeah.
Right. Thomas Berdych likes a bit of Insta game as well, doesn't he? And he became quite into Twitter for a while. And about 10 years ago, he used to cause all sorts of problems for Andy Murray and Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic. He beat, I think he beat Federer and he beat Federer and Djokovic back-to-back?
Back-to-back to make the Wimbledon final. 2010? And then lost to Nadal.
2010, yeah. Wow.
I remember writing stories about his father being a train driver in the build-up to that... in the build-up to that final with lots of laboured Thomas the Tank Engine puns.
Oh,
you're going to go back and look at that one, aren't you? Well, now I've got the paywall down
today. I was
going
to say, it's free on the Telegraph for 24 hours.
Say that.
I know what I'm doing after this.
I will... How many Thomas the Tank Engine puns are there? Right, we'll find out soon.
I thought better of Simon Briggs than this.
My first and most prominent Thomas Burdick memory is him beating Roger Federer at the 2004 Athens Olympics. That is the one that got away for Roger Federer.
Yeah.
That should have been his
Olympic
gold.
That's when he was totally dominant in the sport, wasn't he, Federer?
Olympic
at the time.
Singles gold, I should say.
And Burdick came along with his ponytail, as he had back then, and knocked him off the court.
18-year-old at the time.
Yeah.
Was the Nicolas Massou Olympics.
Yes. He won a lot of matches against Federer in a certain period around there. And then it stopped happening, I think. and he had some pretty tasty ones. Remember that one he had with Andy Murray at the Australian Open semi-final?
Parental advisory.
You flash check bleep.
Yeah.
They claimed that we misread that one, didn't they? They claimed that it was actually something else that was said, but didn't look very complimentary anyway.
And he also shushed the Madrid crowd when he beat Nadal on the Madrid hardcore indoors, I think in about 2006, something like that.
Yeah.
He wasn't
That's
afraid
a misfire, isn't it?
Yeah, and then Nadal, I think, beat him 18 times in a row.
genuinely 18 times in a row. Nadal at the net, wagging his finger, saying, "Very bad." Very bad.
But, I mean, all the cliches you hear about Thomas Burdick, that he's like one of the cleanest ball strikers, were true when you watched him live. I think you got... I always felt a much greater appreciation for Thomas Burdick, the tennis player, watching him live compared to on TV, because the pureness of his strike, the effortless power, would just ping off his strings, and it was... I mean, that's a talent that is so clear to see.
Did he underachieve?
I think he had... But he had other weaknesses.
Mm.
I mean, if you're looking for the platonic ideal of the underachieving tennis player, isn't it Thomas Burdick?
But he existed in an era where you couldn't have... I'm talking about him like he is. I'm writing his obituary. You couldn't have movement as a weakness. You can't...
Yeah.
You can't afford to have that
there must have been days,
these days. And it was such a weakness.
It must have been days when he... He had so many cracks, didn't he, in the second week of majors? So many. It must have been days when he was up against people who, if he believed more, did he need a Lendl figure? I mean, Lendl wouldn't work with him, would
Possibly.
He?
Possibly. But I mean, he tried to hire him, didn't he? After Lendl left Murray for the first time, and I think if you look back, though, he pretty much always reached his seeded position. You know, he didn't let himself down. It was only in the big matches against the biggest players. I mean, and we talked about how he beat them back-to-back that one time. But he sort of... He hit his peak, didn't he? And he plateaued and he didn't raise the bar again. But movement-wise, it was like watching an articulated lorry by comparison to these other players. And I know that sounds really harsh, but just his physique, he had incredibly strong legs, but he was almost too muscular, too strong, and not sprightly enough around the court.
But you'd see players with big games get over that hurdle now and again on the day when things lined up for them and they just mashed the ball into a pulp.
Yeah.
You see players do that once in a while, and he just, in the second half of his career, he just never did it.
No,
he did a bit in his first.
If you want to go...
And he got scar tissue, didn't he?
And if you want to criticise Burdick, my criticism of him would be that he was a clean ball striker who wanted to win cleanly. He didn't want to get his hands dirty. And if you took him into the trenches... I wasn't confident that he would come out on top.
Murray did that a few times to him, didn't he?
Play in the wind. Do you remember that? The US Open
the semi-final.
Murray played against him in the wind. And as soon as... I mean, it was...
a chair blew on the court.
But as soon as you saw that it was those kind of conditions, you thought, oh, but it doesn't stand a chance here. Because it's not a purist's match, is it? You have to win ugly in those conditions, and that's Burdick's not your man for that.
But wish him all the very best.
Your man for that.
And Dominika Sibulkova as well. It's, you know, they've had really good careers that have been interesting to follow.
Simon's just called him the platonic ideal of the underachiever. David says, great careers.
Yeah.
And the other retirement news that broke this evening is the Bryans announcing that they're going to stop at the US Open next year.
Did they?
Yeah. I think it was Mike went on to Tennis Channel and announced that so they're playing until the US Open next year, and then they're going to call it a day.
Oh,
but
that's
they are in their 40s.
That's going to be emotional. It's almost like the first of the big four going.
Mm.
So there really will be only one metal hip on tour.
There can be only one.
Blimey, we've covered some topics. Simon, lovely to have you with us, as always.
Nice to see you.
Go and write some more stuff. Articles every day in The Telegraph from Simon Briggs.
Free for the next, how long?
6 a.m. I think it finishes.
Okay.
You've got 7 more hours.
Any other belting stories on the way that we should know about?
The Chris Kermode's farewell press conference today.
Okay, going to write something on that?
Yeah, done that one.
Okay, we'll look forward to having a look. And what did he say, just briefly? Anything of interest?
He said it hurt.
Yeah. Chris Kermode, 6 years in the job, out at the end of this year. And, yeah, it hurts, I think, the bloke. But anyway, we'll talk about Chris Kermode when we've got more time than 1 minute left in the podcast. Just to say, we'll be back again tomorrow with another.
Determined not to preview Team Berrettini.
Well, okay, what's happening in Team Berrettini?
I think the team's probably winning.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Without anyone noticing.
Okay, that's tomorrow afternoon, and we've got Djokovic against Federer in the evening. Matt's got something else to say.
Well, just that there is a doubles shootout tomorrow involving Joe Salisbury.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Salisbury and Rajiv Ram against Kubot and Mello, I think it is.
Yes.
And the winners of that will go through, and that would obviously be a big deal for Joe Salisbury.
Yeah.
And I mean for all of them, but
which is that, afternoon or evening?
Afternoon. So the afternoon ticket holders do get a live match at least.
Yeah.
You also breezed over the opportunity for us to tell our really excellent burger and chips story.
Off you go.
Yes. Well, we were trying our best to replicate the conditions of yesterday.
Right.
Sitting together. Even the fan in the row in front was the same
Literally
fan.
The same human being.
We thought she was just a team fanatic, but no, she's just a tennis fanatic.
Or a tennis podcast
In the
fanatic.
Same seat. Okay. I was wearing the same jumper. same
Honestly,
jeans.
We went to great lengths to replicate the conditions.
Yeah.
Except that, it turns out the spanner in the works is the fact that in the O2 arena, you are not permitted to purchase just chips. It is mandatory that you purchase burger and chips, which at an event where at least once per match you are being lectured to by Daniil Medvedev about the importance of a healthy diet on the big screens is pretty ironic.
Oh, what a story.
So yeah,
I was already irritated by those big screen bits where Stefanos Tsitsipas tells me to drink less alcohol.
That's going well.
And Novak Djokovic tells me not to smoke, and Roger Federer tells me just to sort of be a better human being.
Yeah, right. And Nadal to don't take risks in the sun or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Oh.
But
well,
yeah, so we ended up with a burger. Which I'd already had dinner. Catherine's already had dinner.
Yeah.
What happened?
They're literally forcing burgers down your throat while lecturing you about the importance of a balanced diet.
Have you still got that burger?
Someone gobbled it up.
Did they?
Mm.
Who?
Don't know.
Him?
No, it wasn't me.
It wasn't.
No. Somebody not interested in heeding the advice of Daniil Medvedev.
No, I could murder a burger right now. Anyway.
You just know that Daniil Medvedev is a bloke that can eat whatever he wants and still be the streakiest guy in town. You just know
it. Like Tim Henman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
irritating.
Anyway, we've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, executive produced by tennisballs.com. Our mascot's Rio with a Y. Look, I've met loads of people today who listen to the Tennis Podcast. If any of them are not telling their friends about us, there's trouble, all right? That goes for all of you. Tell people you know about the podcast so we get more listeners.
Crazy voice.
It's the new me.
Well, you posted your picture with the listeners of the Tennis Podcast and they had their friend with them and you cropped the friend out.
But he told me he didn't want to listen.
They identified the wool in sheep's clothing. No, the sheep in wolf's clothing. Oh, God, it's been a long day. And edited him out of the photo.
Well, he told me he didn't want to listen. So that's
wolf,
the sort
of... It's a wolf in sheep's clothing, isn't it? Oh,
it
Christ.
Was a perfectly legitimate thing to do. Yeah. And given that we know he's not listening, then it's fine.
Yeah, but we'll say hello to Sherry and James, who were listening and loved the show, because we love them. Anyway... and we'll be back tomorrow with another Tennis Podcast. See you then.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.